Ron and Anian.
Auto repair shops are, they're about piles. There's piles of parts. There's piles of cars. There's piles of paperwork. There are piles of tools. You're always dealing with piles.
Going down the road at 8 miles.
The car doctor.
Worst case scenario, you got to go out and buy more tools. Maybe go out and buy a little thermal gun or a heat gun and, you know, just an infrared gun. And how hot's the trans case when it happens?
Buy more tools.
What's
my wife going to say about that?
Yeah, well, listen, but if I can get you to buy more tools, I can get you to be less of a parts changer. Dad would be proud of you.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the car doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. Hello and welcome, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor. At your service at 855-560-9900. Cranked up, fired up, and ready to go. How wonderful is it that you get to do this each and every weekend? I keep saying to myself, Ron, that I keep thinking of Stephen Furst in Animal House. You know, the oh boy, is this great thing, and oh boy, is this great that we get to sit here and talk about cars. And I was also thinking about how I need to work harder for you guys. I really do. I need to improve the way I think, and it's one of the reasons I don't listen to the show. Believe it or not, I don't listen to myself after the show. I get to be too critical. But I've been thinking in the past couple of months that I've got to do this job a little bit better, and I apologize if I've been slacking off. I just keep looking for different things to try and talk about. You know, it's like, here, take this story. So, true story. Let me see if I can present this in a clearer manner than maybe I have in the past. 2010 Lincoln MKX came into the shop at RA Automotive this week, and the customer's complaint was he had a water leak in the car. By the driver's side, on the driver's side footrest over by the gas pedal. And we brought it in, signed it up, and sure enough, I went out there. It was my turn, came in my rack, and I checked it. Yeah, there's it's damp around the carpet. And I'm going, gee, how the heck is the water leak? Like, what's over here? Because this is a leak just about dead center of the car under the dashboard next to the console. And then I remembered. The AC evaporator drain is there. You know, you see water running out of air conditioning units walking down Main Street, the storefronts, right? You see the AC drain. Cars have that too. And I said, I bet you the drain is clogged. So I'm kind of a big guy, and this is that, it's one of those John Panette nay-nay moments, the fat guy in the tight spot, and you just sort of shove yourself between the seat, the steering wheel, and the dashboard, and you're stuffed in there. And you peel back the carpet, and you find the drain. Yep, there's the drain hose. I was right. The drain's backed up. So you kind of unstuff yourself, and you back up, and you pop out, and you go get a little container. You're anticipating. I'm thinking the drain's clogged. I take an air gun. I take a long piece of mechanics wire. I kind of fish up there. Nothing happens. Gee, there's got to be water in this thing. Where's the water coming from? So I sort of stuff myself back up, and I'm kind of wedged in between. Really, this is going on, and Danny's working on cars in Bay 1 and 2, and he's watching this, and he's going, the old man's cracking up, like, what's going on here, right? It's trying to fit 5 pounds of bologna in a 2.5-pound sack. I'm really kind of wedging my way in. So I get the drain out. I take the air hose now, and I say, I wonder what happens. This is an I Love Lucy moment. I wonder what happens if I blow air up this hose. Oh, boy. You ever go to the supermarket, you buy those containers of coffee, they're like those plastic, Maxwell House makes it. It's like, I think it's 16 or 32 ounces now. I think it was a 32-ounce container of Maxwell House coffee. It was an empty coffee cup container. That's what I had. We just made coffee and thrown it out. I was sitting on top of it. Oh, I'll use this. This will be the water bucket. How much water could come out of an air conditioning unit, right? So I'm wedged under the dashboard. I've got the cup. I've got the coffee can, the coffee plastic bucket, if you will. And I blow air up the nozzle. And instinctively, as I'm watching water start to dribble out, I kind of pinch the rubber hose shut. Okay. I take the, and I'm working. You know how like you're stuffed in tight? I take the plastic pail and I put it under the bucket. I put it under the hose. And I open the hose. Oh, my God. All right? It filled that plastic container, 32 ounces of water, in under 15 seconds.
Go!
And then, right, so I pinched the rubber hose shut. So now I've got a problem. Now I've kind of got my finger, you know, on the end of the hose. I can't move the pail or I'm going to spill all this water in the car. And I'm going, Danny, you know, like, I'm okay. I'm not hurt, but I'm stuck and I've got to get rid of something. Danny comes over. This had to be like a Keystone Cops caper. It would have been a great video. And Danny takes the water, throws it out. He says, how much more you got? I said, I don't know. Gives me back the coffee container. I do the same thing. I put it underneath the hose. I open up the hose. I took 2.5 containers of water. 32, 32, 64, and 16. Holy smokes of water out from under the dash of this car. And it came out brown like... You know, I still don't understand how it became so clogged. Needless to say, I fixed the water leak. So I got to the second part of the customer's complaint. The air conditioning wasn't working well. And I'm thinking in the back of my mind, well, of course it's not working well. It's trying to blow cold air through, you know, 8 inches of water across an evaporator. But no, that wasn't it. Nay, nay. It was the blower motor didn't work. Aha! Why doesn't the blower motor work? There's a couple of rules about electricity, all right? And one of them has to do with inducing water into an electrical motor. The water level in the evaporator under the dash had gotten so high, it up the top of the evaporator case, over to the right, and every time he made a turn in the proper direction, the water sloshed over and filled the blower motor. I took the blower motor out from under the dash and turned it upside down, and another 5 ounces of water came out of that. So, true story, and I hope I'm telling it that you can understand it, because it was really not so much for the customer, but it was kind of hysterical to us. He didn't, you know, the bill was, you know, there was $1,100 worth of blower motor, blower resistor, you know, time draining the thing, and Will got it. He was fine with it. He said, hey, listen, at least I know it's fixed. He said, maybe that explains the sloshing. And I went, sloshing? Yeah, he goes, I thought I was going crazy, because he's an older guy. He's in his 80s. He said, I thought I was starting to hear things, because I used to be a sailor, and I thought I was starting to hear, like, my mind was playing tricks on me. I'm hearing sloshing as I'm driving around the turns. And he said, I thought I was back on the deck of the ship, and I keep thinking, I got to go to the doctor. I'm cracking up. And I said, no, Will, you really, you might be cracking up anyway, but what you heard was real. You heard the AC evaporator drain. So the point of this is, just when you don't think how much water can an AC evaporator drain hold, there you go. Mr. Ray, you had a comment.
Yes, I just wanted to say, you obviously learned the truth about electronics. They all work on smoke. When the smoke comes out, they don't work anymore, huh?
Well, yeah, it was, Tom, I was stunned.
I'm sitting here, what? How much?
Yeah, how much water can come out of a, you know, it's true story, though. An absolute true story. That's what happened at the shop this week. And I've probably got a dozen more we can talk about, and we probably will at some point. I also want to do something. And I always say I'm going to do this, and I don't. I'm going to do this hour. I want to begin a section, and I feel it's my responsibility that if you're taking the time to listen, I've got to explain things better and more. Better and more. More and better? Well. Maybe well would be a better. I got to get hold of my 8th grade English teacher, Mr. Sterling, ask him. I want to talk about brake pads today. And it's not a sales pitch. It absolutely isn't. I have no agenda. I'm not trying to sell a product. I was thinking that part of what I don't do is explain the thought process on simple things. You want to go out and put brakes on your car, all right? I need you to think about what sort of choices to make and how to make them. We're going to talk about that this hour. I'm going to pull over, take the pause. We've got a couple of phone calls. We're going to knock those off. By quarter of the hour, we're going to talk about making decisions on buying brakes. All right, I'll make you that deal. Stick around. Give me another 30 minutes of your day, and I'll give you back some more information about picking brake parts, picking parts in general. Maybe we'll refer to it that way. Let's see how well I can do today. I appreciate your trust. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor coming back right after this.
When the family car needs some fixing, there's only two things that really matter: getting the right part and getting some good advice. It's a pretty safe bet that with over a million parts in stock, Pep Boys has the right part right now. The Pep Boys pros are extensively trained to find the right part for just about any car or truck. Better yet, these pros can also handle the entire installation or service needed. It's always good to have options, and know the Pep Boys pros have it covered either way.
Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, back and rolling along at 855-560-9900. Remember, you can get out to our Car Doctor page, cardoctorshow.com, and podcast vis-a-vis cardoctorshow.com. You'll take you over to Spreaker, or maybe you're using DoublePod on your Android device or whatever, many other multiple types of podcast players. If you have the ability, click subscribe. If you're at Spreaker, please click follow, and that helps drive the numbers, and that's what keeps us here. As, you know, we try to motor along and keep giving you information. Let's go over to Larry in Baston. So how's things up north there, Larry? What can I do for you today?
Nice and warm today, Ron.
Yeah, I bet.
Hey, I've got a 2009 Tahoe.
Okay.
91,000 miles. The service airbag light just came on.
All right.
My scan tool, I have a basic one, can't read airbag codes.
Okay.
Now, this is the second time it's happened. The first time I went to the dealer, and he replaced the impact sensor.
In the front bumper.
More than one.
Yeah, there's
up
two.
Up under the front bumper.
Yeah, there's a left and a right, correct.
So I'd like to avoid having to go back, and I'd like to fix this myself if I could.
Okay.
Could you recommend a scan tool that for a weekend mechanic, you know, that's not going to set me back, you know, more than $150 or so, that allows the, that can be updated and do the basics, but read ABS code, airbag codes?
The $150 is the hard part, Larry. That's yeah. The issue. You know, the price point. And at that point, I would tell you to go look at, I would do this two ways. I would think about the launch line, all right, the launch scan tool line. The Millennium 90. I don't know where the price point is. I think it's I've got to believe it's more than $150. I think it's in the $400 to $600 range, and I believe that tool does do airbag reset. All right, or I would go look on eBay and see what shop is selling what older scan tool cheap that might give you more miles and more functionality and more, you know, more ability. The problem with scan tools. You know, you can't look at a scan tool as you want to just fix this particular problem. You know, worrying about right. this particular problem is like trying to shoot a shotgun and hitting a target a mile away with one singular pellet. You know, it's too focused, and it's just about impossible. You can't do it. So what it really comes back to is if you think you're going to fix cars, let's think of this from longevity. You think you're going to fix your own cars or tinker with them for at least another 5 years?
Sure.
All right. If you buy... Oh, I don't know. If you buy a $2,000 scan tool, that'll get you through the next 5 years, because you're not running out tomorrow to buy a 2018 whatever. You're going to keep your 09 Tahoe for a while, and there's probably another 6-7 year old vehicle in the family for a while, right? So you put $2,000 down and you go buy a used Snap-on Solus on eBay, for example. All right.
Yeah.
And that tool's updated through 2017, and you know, you spend $2,000. You know, 5 years from now, that or 4 years from now, the math is easier. That tool cost you $500 a year, cost you, you know, $50-$60 a month.
Yeah.
You know, you look at it like that. That's pretty cheap, right? And it's got all the functionality and capability of you know, a real scan tool per se. And if you ever really feel brave and you want to update the tool, you know, you find a Snap-on guy at your local mechanic, and whatever the update is, $900, $1,000, $1,200, and you run the tool another couple of years, provided your fleet is still that same fleet or around that same generation. These small little handheld tools that only do OBD2, they're good, but they're limited. And I typically, you know, everybody usually calls me up and they say, hey, I want a tool that does this, 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 and this. You know, it's, listen, there's a lot of things in life I want. Not too many, actually. I'm pretty happy with the way life turned out. But you know what? I'd like to be 18 again, knowing what I know at this age, because I'd buy more car parts and more cars, but I'd also have a lot more fun along the way. So I, you know, it's just a matter of numbers. You got to figure out how to condense them and crush them and crunch them. And you know, if you look at it from that perspective, then because what if you buy this tool, and I realize I'm rambling, but what if you buy this tool, you fix the airbag, and 2 weeks from then the air conditioning has a problem and you can't get into the HVAC or the BCM. Right?
Well, if I do the eBay route, you know, let's say buy a Snap-on tool or something like it on the used market, is there an easy way to check them out such that you know, I'm not buying somebody else's problem?
That's fair point, fair question. The right answer is, you know, you're depending upon the eBay guy saying, hey, it worked perfect the last time I shut it off and hooked it up to a car, and then you've got the eBay guarantee. So maybe the better solution is that, you know, like, for example, my Snap-on tool dealer here in New Jersey has his own Facebook page. And from time to time, Jay will put up, you know, deals. He's taking in tools on trade. And, you know, he knows the history of the tool. And maybe I'm paying a couple of bucks more. But again, looking at the over the course of 4 or 5 year thing, what's the extra $200, $300, $400, $500 if I'm buying from, you know, it's like buying a used car. You know, it's like I'm buying it from a known good source versus the guy who's, you know, parking lot with his used cars on it is next to the river. And, you know, every time it rains, there's a sign right next door. You know, that's got to be the worst thing in the world. Have a used car lot next to a sign that says area floods. Can't understand why his cars aren't selling. You know, so maybe there's a Facebook, I'm sure up in Boston area where you live, I'm sure there are Snap-on dealers, and I'm sure they've got Facebook pages, and maybe you go talk to one of those guys, you know.
Right.
And you know, listen, Snap-on guys aren't afraid to talk to consumers. They're just trying to sell tools. You know, my Snap-on guy deals with a lot of weekend warriors, as I call them. And, you know, they're just trying to sell tools and you know, keep the product line moving. So they're okay guys to go talk to. If you have questions, go talk to your Snap-on guy.
Okay. Give it a shot.
All right,
thanks, sir. Very much.
You're very welcome. Good luck to you. Let me know what happens. Yeah, there's absolutely nothing wrong there. I do want to talk about brakes, but I'm not going to do it now. But what's on my mind is, just to give you a tidbit of where I think I'm going with this is, you know, you walk into an auto parts store and you need brakes for your 09 Chevy Tahoe. And, you know, you're trusting the guy behind the counter. Not that you can't trust the guy behind the counter, but, you know, and this is probably more towards the young people in the crowd, if there's any out there today, in the sense that, you know, it's really amazing. And this is what triggered it. I'll tell you the story this way. I'm doing a bad job of telling you this. I'm sorry. I was in the chiropractor this morning, and the young girl sitting next to me called her mechanic and said, I need to come in this afternoon to have you change the lamps for the stoplights. And it just sounded weird the way she said it. And I listened to her try and explain it a couple of times. And what it is she was trying to talk about is she had a directional bulb out, but she related it for some reason to the brake lights. And you know what? As I talked to her, I said, somebody needs to explain to the kids what cars are. And that's what we've got to do. And then I said, what's the most common thing they need to do? They all need to stop. We've got to talk about brakes. We're going to do that a little bit later on this hour. Right now, we're going to pull over and take a pause. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Back right after this. Don't go away.
Little GTO, you really look at mine. And a 389.
Need advice on how to maintain that classic GTO? Ron is the guy. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
Hey, welcome back. Ron on the name of the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. All points in between, cardoctorshow.com. Take the podcast. Do what you can. Let's go over and talk to Paul, Elkton, Maryland, 07 Ford F-150. Yes, Paul, how can I help, sir?
Hey, how are you doing today, Ron?
I'm good. What's cooking?
I'm calling because I've got a power steering leak.
Okay.
And I've tracked it down. And the line is rusted through.
Is this the big long line, the return line coming out of the pump that leads down and like goes to the, it goes along the front of the frame rail or the cross member and then comes back and feeds into the gear? It acts like the power steering cooler?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that one, there's a rusty spot on that, and then one of the other ones, too.
Yeah, they always rust where it makes the right angle bend coming over the top of the cross member. It's kind of weird. It's
right, yeah, it's exactly where it's leaking.
Yeah, that's so. Yeah. Been there, done that. So, yeah, what do you got? What's going on?
Mm-hmm. So, two things. I'm wondering, is this a sealing product? Like, I know you push or are really big on the K-Seal for coolant leaks. Is there something similar to that that I could put it just to get by until I can get time to get it fixed?
No, or? Nothing.
Okay.
You know, because it's probably leaking at the metal line. If this was a rubber power steering seal type of a leak,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not a fan of, you know, the reason I like K-Seal as a coolant leak product is because usually that coolant system repair is so expensive. It outweighs the cost of the value of the car, so the repair becomes prohibitive. All right, or
mm-hmm.
it's somebody on limited funds. The one example I had recently was the college student with the car that, you know, it had whatever it was 100,000 miles on it, no money, and she's trying to get through another 4 or 5 months, and it worked very well. As a matter of fact, the car's still going, and I think that's probably 10 months
mm-hmm.
ago. But power steering. No, and this is a metal line leak. There's nothing that's going to replace that metal, so this becomes a matter of you've got to change the line.
Right, yeah, I figured that was the case. I just thought if there was something that I could get away with for a little while longer.
Yeah, no, sir.
Then my next question is, what would you recommend for brands for the parts at this point?
I can tell you this, Motorcraft, the last time we tried to buy a Motorcraft, we just did one 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Motorcraft, we weren't able to get a Motorcraft piece out of the Motorcraft distributor. We had to go through the Ford dealer. The Ford dealer had it on back order. We ended up getting a piece, a brand from Edelman, E-D-E-L-M-A-N, Edelman, I think is the way it's spelled. Worked fine, went right in, had no issues. You know, mm-hmm. it really wasn't a problem. We didn't have any bleed issues. You know, there is, was that the car we had a, actually, I take that back. The one thing we did on that car, We have a set of power steering adapters from MightyVac, and we screwed it on the reservoir, and we pulled vacuum on it, and that helped purge air out of the system. You can do it, too, just by cycling the wheel back and forth a couple of times, and then, you know, maybe when you park it at night, shut the vehicle off, take the power steering cap off, and, you know, depending upon, maybe you could, like, tilt the nose up a little bit. Tilt the nose.
Mm-hmm.
I think on that truck, tilting the nose up would help, and just leave the power steering cap off. When you come back in the morning, a little burped a couple of air bubbles out, and that's an old trick that's worked for years. But yeah, it's pretty much cut and dry at that point. It's pretty much
okay.
Cut and dry. So
I was going to say a couple other things. I've been watching some YouTube and whatnot, and it looks like there you are. The big problem with those is getting the lines out of where they mount into the actual steering rack.
Yeah, there's a little bit corroded in there. Yeah, there's a little bit of finesse. You know, soaking it with some rust buster, some rust penetrant,
mm-hmm.
works really well. I like the stuff. The what I think is probably some of the best rust penetrant, underrated as it is on the market, is still the Liquid Wrench Blue Torch. Was it Liquid Wrench Blue Torch technology? Black can, yellow cap. You know, we call it magic in the shop. We keep Danny and I keep saying to each other, the stuff's so good. We're amazed they haven't outlawed it or banned it yet, because it just works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually the good stuff gets taken away from you, but. You know, it works really well, and just soak the lines and just take your time. When you put it together, the end going in the rack, and this is just me being fussy, Paul, I'll use a little mm-hmm. dab of liquid Teflon. I always use a dab of liquid Teflon on all the threads of all my power steering components. And here's the argument for everybody that says, why do you do that? There's a seal sealing it. It's an older vehicle. The threads, you know, they've gotten a little tired. You know, you'll get some seeps. It doesn't hurt. Just a tiny dab, you know, a Q-tip sized dab of Teflon on the threads where it begins. So as you thread it into the rack or into the pump, it'll automatically coat the threads. And that way you don't get any sweating. You don't get any seepage of any kind. And the other nice thing about Teflon is there's a little bit of Loctite in that formula. I've found, I read this somewhere years and years ago, and it will help keep that line tight without having to really crank on it too hard, which is the other mistake everybody makes. They try to overcompensate and let the Teflon, let the product do the job.
Gotcha.
All right.
And then would you recommend I do the pump while I'm there, too? I mean, I got 215,000 miles out of it.
Well, so. You know, the argument there is, you know, what value of what quality of part can you get? Do you have an O'Reilly Auto Parts near you in Maryland?
We don't know, but I can look online.
Yeah, look online. Go to O'ReillyAuto.com. I know they've got the MightyVac adapters. They'll have the lines. And talk to them. Say, hey, what brand of power steering pumps do you have? What's working? What's not a problem? All right? And, you know, if you can get a Motorcraft reman, I would do that. If you can get something else from them that they recommend that works, I would do that. You know, the issue is going to be if it's got 200-something thousand miles on it, you know, you also want to do a power steering flush, get rid of all the old fluid. So it is nicer to start with a fresh pump with fresh fluid. It can only help and let you drive the truck longer. So
right. The other thing with that is I'm getting a chirping noise under. It's weird. It only does it when you're in drive or a reverse. And I don't know if it's the power steering pump or what's going on there, but it's very strange.
When you say chirping, what do you mean chirping?
It's like a high frequency that increases with RPM, like a squeak, like a bearing or something.
And you're thinking it's, well, why don't we do this? Let's do this. First of all, let's take the belt off. Start the truck up. Does the noise go away?
Okay.
All right. And if it does, then we know it's one of the four components that are rotating: water pump, power steering pump, idler pulley, tensioner pulley, 5, compressor. We can eliminate it that way. And if it doesn't, then we've got another problem somewhere else, and the sound is traveling and distorting our auditory. So
right, that was my question, is that if you had ever seen the difference in load cause something that wouldn't normally make it a noise in the accessory drive to make a noise.
Yeah, I've seen failing power steering pumps, failing alternators, failing AC compressors all cause issues. Load on the belt, load on the system. It will sometimes make the belt track funny. Do you know where a belt makes the most noise before I go? Do you know where a belt makes the most noise from? It rubs the sides.
No, man.
It rubs the sides, brother. It's usually not the face of the belt unless there's contaminant on it or contaminant on the pulleys. But a belt starts to run off track, and it starts to rub the sides of the belt, the inside or the outside face of the belt, and that's what makes the most noise, chirping, squeaking, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So always look to see how does the belt line up with the rest of the pulleys. Very, very important.
Okay, great.
All right. That'll do it for you.
Good deal. I do appreciate that, and thank you very much for your input, and I listen to you every week.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate you being there, and I appreciate your response, sir. Good luck with the truck, and let me know how things work out. You take good care.
All right. Sounds good.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the car doctor, screaming along. Be back right after this. Don't go away.
When the family car needs some fixing, there's only two things that really matter: getting the right part and getting some good advice. It's a pretty safe bet that with over 1 million parts in stock, Pep Boys has the right part right now. The Pep Boys pros are extensively trained to find the right part for just about any car or truck. Better yet, these pros can also handle the entire installation or service needed. It's always good to have options, and know the Pep Boys pros have it covered either way.
Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the car doctor. I didn't want you to think I forgot. Not this segment. Next segment. We're going to hold all calls after I take this next one, and we're going to talk about buying brake parts or buying parts, things, choices you make at the parts counter, and hopefully the young people out there are listening. We're going to start the education process in a little more detail. Let's go over to Mark in Maui. Mark, 01 Subaru, what's going on here, babe?
Hey, Ron. Nice to talk to you.
You too.
I just bought this car a couple months ago. Has 112,000 miles on it. I've driven it 2,000 miles, and it a couple of times has overheated on me. It's very intermittent, and I just thought I'd give you a call, see if you might be able to help me diagnose the problem.
Any dash warning lights on, Mark? Any gauges going kaflooey, or just it'll just start to run hot, and that's
nothing.
It?
Yeah, nothing. Nope. No, nothing on the on the dashboard at all.
And when we say hot, you're looking. You have a temperature gauge on this car?
Yeah, it just the needle starts rapidly climbing into the red zone, and then I just pull over and turn it off.
All right. The next time that happens, well, let's talk about overheat in general for knowledge sake, all right? And I don't want to bore everybody, you know, with the minutia, but let's just say you get into an overheat. What are the things we traditionally look at? We think about thermostats, right? Could a thermostat be blocked? But for an intermittent failure, I have a hard time buying a thermostat as an intermittent fault, right? Because you're saying this happens once every 2 weeks?
Yeah, it happened last weekend, and then it happened like a couple of weeks prior to that.
Right. Okay, and then we could talk about, you know, radiator caps, and that would be another cop-out because, you know, radiator caps, intermittent basis, it fails. I've never seen one not be, you know, it's good or it's bad. I just don't see them be intermittent on a regular basis. So, but things to think about with overheats. And then, you know, the other thing I would obviously, how's the radiator? But somebody would have to explain to me how a radiator could be intermittent. All right. And then last, is the cooling fan coming on? When this goes into the overheat, do you hear the cooling fan running?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, I was luckily very mindful. As soon as it hit that red zone, I pulled over, turned the car off, and the cooling fan came on.
Okay.
When the car was in the was off.
Okay.
I mean, yeah.
So that eliminates that as a possibility. Then I'll tell you what I believe is wrong with the car. All right. Because what's very common on these, the number one failure, the most common failure for this, for an intermittent overheat on a Subaru of this generation, are head gaskets. Head gaskets and or cracked heads, issues with the block and the head itself.
Yeah.
So, and I think you kind of knew that. You were just hoping for a better answer. But, you know, that's really what we see more of. So a mechanic, if he wanted to catch it in the act, he could do something called a combustion gas leak check, which in English is get the car running hot, get the thermostat to open, and he can use a little, it sort of looks like a turkey baster. It's a squeegee sucker type of device that will draw coolant fumes up through the liquid and the device, and it'll change from blue to green or green to yellow. It's looking for, you know, trace of combustion chamber gas in the cooling system. Kind of a pricey, extensive, you know, it's a couple $100, I'm sure, by the time they're done. But here, let me give you this quick tip, but understand the ramifications. The next time it overheats, shut the car off, pop the hood. Be careful. Everything's going to be screaming hot, right?
Right.
See if you can get to the lower radiator hose. If the lower radiator hose is cold and the upper radiator hose is hot, the only logical thing is there's an air bubble behind the thermostat. And that air bubble, that air pocket came out as a result of the head gasket, and it's keeping the thermostat from opening because this particular car, it's got to be hot on the backside of the stat to make it open to allow the circulation process to happen. All right? Just please be careful. It's a hot car. You're popping a hood. You know, you're standing too close to the shark. I just don't want to see you get bit. Try that.
No,
See what that does for you. Try that, and then call me back next week. 855-560-9900. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Amy, the Car Doctor. I want to talk to you about picking parts, all right? Young or old, whoever you are, whatever you are, if you're out there trying to work on your car on the weekend, save a couple of bucks, I get it. And there's a lot of choices. You walk into an auto parts store, whether it's an O'Reilly Auto Parts or somewhere else, there's a lot of choices when it comes to brakes. And I think the takeaway here is the thing you have to think about, because there's so many choices on price, right? There's that $10 set of white box pads. There's that $60 set of Wagner boxed brake pads. There's that $30 set in between of the house brand. What's the deal? How do you decide? I have yet to see a brake friction material, brake pads, manufacturer that doesn't have more than one grade or level of brake. There's usually a premium, a middle of the road, and, you know, the cheapie. Even Wagner. Wagner's got discount line of brake material out there. The majority of brakes in this country are made in China. 10 factories pumping this stuff out, built to specs. You know, they're just taking orders. It's let's make this do this, let's make that do that. I want it to look like this, I want it to look like that. It's all about dollars, and you know, it's all different levels and grades. The cheaper brake pads, you're more likely to have noise issues. And although they've gotten better in recent times, but there's also a wear factor. You will find that the cheaper brake pad wears quicker, obviously. The name brand premium versus the house premium, I think it's a question of bucks, all right? I'd rather see somebody put a premium grade house brand on versus a cheapie any day of the week in terms of cost. The other thing I want to point out is you've got to think about rotors, all right? The brake rotor is probably a bigger issue than the pad. Using a $10 brake rotor versus a $40 brake rotor, the metallurgy differences and the structure and the strength of that rotor to prevent it from warping are really a lot to consider. And then last, you have to think about how well you're doing that job. Are you washing the rotors? Are you lubing the slides? You need to have a little bit of knowledge on how to do it so that you do it right. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.